was thrilled this week when this journal came through my door. It's a journal from Santa Cruz in California, and I managed to get a poem in there, so I'm really thrilled. It's called, I tend to daydream a lot, and this was written when I was daydreaming. If only she could. She crouched in the corner of her room, her world spinning off its axes, musing upon memories of her crippled past and long forgotten serenity. Tears barricaded behind her eyes, Balzac and the little Chinese seamstress clutched between tight fingers. If only she could travel to China, learn Mandarin and play cello. If only she could make love between rows of scented lavender on scorched earth in Provence. If only she could bathe in a sea of wildflowers, white daisies between her toes, dressed in red silk, her limbs heavy and numb from the cold and crouching, velvety eyes moist with anonymity. If only she could. Then a hungry voice from the distant wilderness begged, "Is dinner ready yet?"
Thanks, Linda, and well done. Next up, we have Goo Goo Gaga. Is it Goo Goo Gaga? Gaga, Goo Goo Goo. Julie Fields.
I'm going to do a quick piece that's called Note to Self, and it's basically a note I wish I'd written to myself about, I don't know, 18 years ago maybe. So Note to Self. Commit random acts of kindness. Surrender to the silences born out of shyness. Stop worrying about what you imagine others think of you. Use your imagination for more positive creations. Would you stop deriving mathematical equations when looking in the mirror? If I count the amount of wrinkles on my face, divide this by my double chin, somehow calculate the speed at which my boobs are sagging, and multiply this by the obtuse angle of my arse, the result will be negative. Stop beating yourself up so much. Stop calling yourself a stupid bitch, you stupid bitch. Stop being so hard on yourself. Breathe. Clear your mind of self-harming sentences. Embrace your achievements. Pat yourself on the back and run yourself a bath. Make oils of lavender and rose essential. It's only through loving yourself you will discover your potential. Yes, love yourself. Love yourself. You cannot escape the essence of who you are. And when you come across others who snigger from afar, well, just walk away with your head held high. Tap into healing energies of earth and sky, you big hippie. Yeah.
Thanks, Gugu. Next up to the mic, could we welcome Michael Ray.
Before. For 10 years, three blue elephants trod the bathroom windowsill, tails entwined in trunks, oblivious of our nocturnal immersions, staining the yellow wall with a curious green light. "Who gave you those?" you said. I remember the way she tuned the tip of a growling flame, drew out their ears from a cerulean glass rod. Now they're buried amongst her letters, and your equilibrium is almost restored. And I am thinking about how much of us becomes consigned.
Thank you, Michael. And next, could we welcome all the way from Limerick, she's come down, Lucia Brunetti.
Butterfly. Pretty, light and graceful, moving from flower to flower, life seems so easy. No trouble, no thoughts, no worries. But it takes a lot of endurance to become a butterfly. From a tiny egg placed on a leaf, she comes out as a hungry caterpillar that eats, 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 leaf after leaf, growing from a thin head to a long, hairy worm, until one day, shedding after skin, she transforms herself in a hanging chrysalis. Still emotionless, she seems to have reached a stable phase in her life. But inside, the metamorphosis continues. Tiny wings are growing out of a sturdy body, and suddenly she comes up, a winged beauty, flying light in the air, pretty and graceful, from flower to flower, oblivious of all the trouble she had to endure to become a butterfly.
Thank you, Lucia. And next up, could we please welcome also all the way from Limerick tonight? He's been a guest poet here at Avail before. We're delighted to see him, Mr. Barney Sheehan.
Thank you very much, everybody. I love to be with you. Please forgive me if I'm walking a bit slow. I just have to be doing my garden yesterday. What did I do? I stepped in a piece of timber in which there was a screw and went up through like my heels. So the moment I'm not very comfortable. Never mind that, I get on with the poetry. You are three guests this evening. I'd like to give a really warm good of us. They're absolutely magnificent. I don't have to do it myself. My poem is called Turin. It's the name of a townland in County Limerick, full stop. It's described where I live, and that's about the size of it. Turin, correct me if I'm wrong, to the eastward side of Torrey Hill, and height above the round, grass so green for minstrel field, and bush banks for horse and hound, while it's covered by fern and flower near a castle or tower. A hunter will come and chase and wait. The welcome how it hand is out and straight. Not here the hound will have him out, as Turin church is not for cunning farm. Our house is plain, but tear the rain, the walls a strain, I wing to shame, the character within without. Bible prayers written heard, his story does unfold, his passions fled to heed our dead. So leave the lives of kings and dread of gods and eyes that is, be not deceived to wing be read. Romance and strife, a nation's trembling trial have talked about within these walls by men of strength and toil. Females to a feather say, hush a woman, listen to your man, these way not hers. Encouragement, no shame. Admiration for his praise and defiance to the painful deeds which he has done. Contrast then leave me when the sun has set and all of that and everyone is rest. The talk and gentle visitors regret and end today a sigh. The rosary is said in a prayer for the dead. Quite goodbyes, she is God blessed for when we meet again. The day has been saved and barred away. The hatch is closed and the gates are jarred. That great day will never, never be an ending. This very going to his tale. Turin, says Turin, at least we fought for him today.
For those of you who don't know, Barney is the founder and he's the man who runs the White House in Limerick, and they recently had 500 nights of poetry there recently. Can you imagine that? 10 years of poetry. Congratulations to you, Barney. Well done. And of course, our commentary guests will be reading up there on Wednesday night if any of you happen to be in Limerick. Right. Next up, could we welcome Mary O'Connell?
Thanks, Paul. This is called Was It a Sign? Saturday morning in Hickey's, I try to explain to the lad at the till when a figure in white appears at my back. I think I could help you with that. Is the sign on your gate metal or wood? The lettering embossed or engraved? I turn and I trust. Set out what I need. The angel in overalls asks where I live. I give him my number as well. Thoughts of axe murderers flit through my head, fade in the light of his smile. He says he is called Charlie Green. He'll ring as soon as he's free. At the end of 9 days, not a word. Back in the store, they reveal the painter is not on their staff. I shrug. Nothing gained, nothing lost. Then he rings, and I hear his concern. He's coming on the boat from Cape Clear. The following day, he takes down the sign. He has plenty of varnish at home. It should help to keep down the cost. Overjoyed, I show him a list of odd jobs put off for too long. He will tackle them all in due course. Starts by trimming the hedge, pulling up weeds by the step. I call him my angel of grace. He laughs. I'm a Virgo. That's why I thrive on hard work. I reply, and you know about star signs as well. Am I dreaming or really awake? He'll come back in a fortnight, he says. I never see him again.
Many of those in the sea, Mary. Next up, we have a poet up from Kinsale, Mr. Adam Wyatt.
There's a new poem I haven't read. I'm going on next, we'll see how it goes. It's quite a long, short poem. Anatolyphobia.
What?
You'll see. Anatolyphobia is the fear that somewhere in the world there is a duck watching you. No matter where you are, the beady eyes of a ringed teal stares down its long bill, searing your skin. You may be on the lavatory, 12,000 feet above sea level, and yet you turn cold as the leer of a mallard pierces through the keyhole. The trauma can be brought on by several aspects. Often it goes back to a time in childhood when the victim was scared or injured by a duck. Perhaps they were flapped at in a park, then tripped and scuffed their knees. But anatolyphobia can sneak up on you out of nowhere. It can appear like the seasonal migration of hooper swans to the lakes. Anatolyphobia is irrational. It is a creature with wings that moves through everything. It is the all-seeing eye of a jealous duck. There is no duck in the sky, and yet people will kill to tell you there is a duck. While the condition is rare, it is possible that somebody, somewhere, will develop it now. There are various evolving suppositions across a wide spectrum of science and medicine on anatolyphobia. Many of them, ironically, appear to be peddled by quacks, making it difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff. Nevertheless, propounding theories on parallel universes make it even more probable that there is a duck looking at you. There is a duck. There is always a duck. Fear is a creature with wings that sees through everything. It is what soaks you when you wake in the middle of the night. Some people let it fall off them like water. Others drown.
Thank you, Adam. Next, we have Stanley Knott.
Thanks, Bob. I'm trying to keep the introduction shorter and shorter. It's pieces of writing comprised of song titles from particular artists. I go back to the very first one I did. This is from the Frank and Walters. I hope you can read it because I've got my glasses. I suppose falling out of love is an elegant chaos after all. And Frank's right. Talking about you isn't paradise. It's a never-ending staircase where high is low and six becomes nine and restraint opens up landslides. But how can I exist if it's time we said goodnight? Must I learn to love myself? Forget you're the greatest? Hold on underground while the world carries on looking for America. Or should I change my way of thinking? Surrender to whim, bake us a song, cast away the idea that you would take me through this life on pathways lined with city lights, summer evenings and miles of turquoise gardens. I suppose falling out of love is an elegant chaos after all. And Frank's right. You can't take too much notice when the last train home on Saturday night don't stop John and Sue making you feel guilty. Isn't it time for New York? Mm-hmm.
Cheers, Stanley. Next up, we have Niall Herriot.
Full circle. This is not autobiographical. Reality is what we take to be true. Like this damn M50 traffic jam. Truth is what we believe in. He believes he needs to take a leak. Belief is based on what we perceive. He perceives the fullness in the abdomen. Perception relates to what we focus on. He focuses on a bladder that feels like bursting. Focus depends on what we think about. He thinks about all those pints he drank. Thought depends on what we perceive. He perceives a tiny trickle in his trousers. Perception is based on what we believe. He believes faces look down from that bus. Belief determines what we take to be true. It's either piss himself or be a flasher. Our truth for each of us is our reality. It's rush hour at the toll gates on the M50.
Thank you, Niall. Next up we have Eileen. Eileen?
Pot of gold. You are my pot of gold. Gold only I can see. Gold only I can hold. Gold only designed for me. You are my special fairy, waving your magic wand, ever present and airy. You are above and beyond. You are my dream come true, everything I wished and more. I radiate light from you. You unlock my unopened door. You are my winning streak, the answer to every prayer. You are the gold I humbly seek, the gold that is always there. You are my pot of gold, gold that will never fade, gold which continues to unfold, gold which you have made. Thank you.
Well done, Eileen. Thank you. Is it your first time here? Is it your first time with the open mic? Third time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well done. Okay, just a couple of people left. So if you don't have your name down, it's your last chance to give me a shout. Next up, we have Alexis Campbell-Bannerman.
Hello.
Hello. I finished my poems to the sea, writing my poems to the sea. It's a little book called Epistle to the Sea. This is one of the final poems. It's for Michael over there, because it's a little bit William Blakey. After the deluge came the sun, and then I realised there was none but one. And stripped of the cloud's deluge delusion, I saw my own body's knit in fusion. And my spirit soared over the waters, and spoke with our sun's smaller daughters. And there I laced through the altitude's ether, and I loved the sun and all beneath her.
Thanks, Alexis. So now, don't forget, if you want to get into the Munster Slam this year, it's being held at Avail. You know, it's at Limerick and Cork. We share it, so it's here this year. And to end off the night tonight, we have the reigning Munster Slam champion, Cal Alden.
I have some bad news. I'm afraid I haven't written since February. Yeah, it's been a rough summer. But I'm going to do the Rocky on it.
Began
training. I started writing again yesterday. That's why I'm here today. What I have is a bit long, unfortunately. But it'll do. It's called The Secret Smile, and it's not my usual style. I think I always say that, though. A long time ago in a faraway mind, there lived a young man by the name of Nicholas. Nicholas was of average build, average height, and average looks. Nicholas was a dream walker. He lived in a small village by a large forest near the eastern coast of northern Italy. His brother, his parents, grandparents, and his cousins all lived in the village, as did the cousins and brothers and sisters, parents and grandparents of all of his friends. The village was known locally as Aubergine, for reasons lost to history, and it did not appear on any maps. Nicholas spent most of his days walking long meandering routes to the outskirts of the village, down into the surrounding valleys and through the forests. He walked to find peaceful places to lie and dream. His best friend was a tame land goat called Perry, who didn't seem to mind big subjects to his hazy monologues, and was more than content to amiably follow a wanderer through the hills and valleys on the condition that he provided the occasional sliced apple or piece of turnip. His favourite dream spot was at the foot of an old olive tree, on a steep hill several miles from the village, where there was a brook, and from time to time, wild raspberries. Perry enjoyed this particular location too. The grass there was succulent, and there was, of course, the occasional raspberry. Nicholas's dreams were always more vivid here. It was in this place that, one late August afternoon, Nicholas had the dream which was to change his life in the village forever. He was lying on his front by the brook, lazily trailing his fingers to the gentle burble of the water, while Perry stood on her hind legs, earnestly attempting to reach a raspberry from one of the higher branches of the late summer bushes. His dreamings were flitting from swirl to haze, in just the way he liked, musings on butterfly wings merging sweetly into the glimpse of a kingfisher about 8 feet away, and folding softly into a rabbit scratching its ear just upstream, and his mind slipped from its reverie into a gentle drowse. He became aware of a slight tingling in his feet, which in actuality was Perry, who, having caught a recalcitrant raspberry and grown bored, begun to lick the salt of Nicholas's left sole, and looked down, seeing beneath him a patch of steel nettles, the form of rough path of pressed earth. Dashing hurriedly away from the unfortunate flora, he set off along the path in search of a dockleaf. The weather was pleasant. The trees that began to canopy the trail sipped the sun beautifully onto his skin. There was a subtle smell of grass and raspberries in the air. Perry had just begun to graze the tender outcroppings of sweet grass by a sleeping dreamer's face, and Nicholas was feeling almost supernaturally happy, walking through the warm afternoon beneath the translucent greenery. A soft breeze stirred the upper boughs of his walkway, and a gentle flurry of sycamore seeds helicoptered down around him, spreading his smile wider around his face and deeper into his contentment. Whistling softly, he strolled for what seemed only a minute. When the trail thinned out, he found himself standing in a clearing. The sun shone large, strong beams in the thickness of the canopy, illuminating a soft, mossy pillow at the foot of an old and gnarly olive tree. This seemed the perfect place to lie down and chase a dream, so Nicholas crossed the glade and spread himself out comfortably at the base of the tree trunk. Within minutes, he was asleep. Back on the hill, Perry was drinking thirstily from the brook just where the now twice dreaming dreamer's head. So Nicholas jumped to the glade. He found himself sitting cross-legged by a beautiful waterfall, with tiny iridescent rainbows gleaming just above the bubbles with the flow of the pool. He felt happier here than ever before. The smile was now so wide and so deep that it spread right the way backwards from where he sat to the glade, the path, and through the nettles, and grew on his own sleeping face by the stream. Standing up, he walked closer to the waterfall, receiving just behind its flowing curtains a small enclave, lit by the sparkling light of the sun shining directly through the falling water. Jumping from rock to rock and stepping to the falls, he emerged in what seemed to him to be the most beautiful place he could ever have imagined possible, even in his dreams, with its smooth, lichen-covered rock that seemed to call out to him to lie upon it and track down another and sleepy village. He lay on his side and watched the sheets of lambent fluid gently rock the corners of his mouth further and further into happiness, as they lulled him into an even snore, a single tear of an inexpressible bliss slipping down his cheek. He woke lying on the side of a brook by a patch of wild raspberries, and for a moment he did not know where he could be. A puzzled bandicoot stood nearby, nibbling on a leather sandal, and he recognised it as Perry. He knew he must be on his hillside by the village, but there was something different. There was a smile on his face that reached deep into his chest and shone out from his heart. The dreamer had awoken, and the dream had followed him home. He walked back that day. Though he often went for walks, he dreamed only from his pillow. Though misfortune sometimes looked his way, for the rest of his life, Nicholas shone that wondrous smile out from his heart like he just couldn't stop. Thank you.